Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday morning.
Yeah, Thursday.
Oh, I was going to say
Wednesday. Thursday, July 17th.
I was out yesterday. No, right. And so thank you, by the way, for filling in.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday. I
forgot all about it.
Well, hopefully you'll forget tomorrow, too. it's Thursday, the 25th of September, and we welcome you to our program, Roundtable at WAMC.org, Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan is off for the high holidays today. However, we'll be back tomorrow, and we have a great panel for you. WAMC's Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning, Joe.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Times Union associate editor Mike Spain joins us as well. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being here. And again, we welcome your input to the program. All you have to do is write to us, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's get to the stories for the day and begin. We'll try to get a lot of stories. We'll get to a lot of this. Of course, the big one yesterday was the president at the UN, which I'll just say from a personal point of view, made traveling through New York City really fun.
Oh, were you there?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, Facebook is full of that. I have a friend. I'm stuck on a bus. Maybe this wasn't the best day to be near the UN building.
No. So President Obama on Wednesday charted a muscular new course for the United States in a turbulent world, telling the United Nations General Assembly in a bluntly worded speech that the American military would work with allies to dismantle the Islamic State's network of death, and warning Russia that it would pay for its bullying of Ukraine. 2 days after ordering airstrikes on dozens of militant targets in Syria, Mr. Obama issued a fervent call to arms against the Islamic State, the once reluctant warrior now apparently resolved to waging a twilight struggle against Islamic extremism for the remainder of his presidency. First of all, I'll ask the two journalists in the room, is that overwritten?
No, yeah. When you compare it to a year ago when he spoke before the United Nations, it's
no,
a
I just
sharp
mean journalistically the whole thing about the reluctant warrior waging a twilight struggle.
Yeah, well,
I was would you edit
like
that?
A YA novel.
But, would you edit that?
But think of, you know, it is a little purple, I'll say that, but factually, man, we have now invaded under Barack Obama 7 Muslim countries. He is one of the most warlike presidents ever. And that goes up against FDR, who had World War II to contend with, and Abraham Lincoln, who did little else but wage war in the United States, the Civil War.
You think they'll take back his peace prize that he got right away?
I was going to bring that up. This was a man who began with, number one, he got an advantage over Hillary Clinton because he voted no against going into Iraq the first time. And then he gets the Nobel Peace Prize. And look at the irony of this. And even now, it's Hillary who's being pilloried, if you will, for her stand on the Middle East. Why didn't she fix this when she had a chance as Secretary of State? Not Barack Obama, who went into Cairo early in his administration and said, I want a different relationship with the Muslim world. It's a shocking turnaround, and one that I, even on this program, said, well, you know, maybe we do have to go in against ISIS. It gives me great pause, and I wish we were sitting back looking at our entire Middle East policy, and that includes relations with Israel. This is not good.
Well, I thought it was a speech that would make John McCain happy.
Yes.
It is hawk-like, right. The president is sounding like a hawk, and he's taking just an entirely different perspective than he had just a year ago. And it is troubling to be sort of going this direction, and yet I think we're backed into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you never know. You never know what's going to happen, and of course, is it world events that is changing? Is it changing his philosophy and attitude, or do you think it is him rethinking that philosophy and attitude and saying this is how we have to react to this? That there is a change in philosophy versus that we are backed into it and we have to react.
Well, I'm not unconvinced that's part of it, a big part of it, that we've been challenged, as ISIS clearly has done, as the whole Syrian conflict has been, you know, a challenge to the United States. And American people and his Republican opponents are demanding action, which he has now given them. So I'm not unconvinced that isn't part of it. On the other hand, again, CNN took a look at the speech he gave when he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He did not say, I'm against war at all costs. What he said was, there were real reasons to use military power. You could not not back down, or not, excuse me, stand up to a threat. You had to act. And it seems like he's living up to a philosophy he has had. We just thought it would mean peace, and it's meaning instead a lot of war.
There was something Mike mentioned the other day on the program about how, I mean, when you look at the president's philosophy on this, there are people who said, well, we should have done something sooner. And so I guess I'm asking a question as to, are we in the situation we're in now due to a lack of action or due to a specific action? Or are what we're seeing now, had we acted sooner, we just would have been in this position a year ago, 2 years ago, that we're in now?
Well, I could say that if we had not invaded Iraq back in 2002, we
absolutely
wouldn't be in this situation.
I'm talking within
the
Obama administration.
It was already a mess, and perhaps you can go back and say, had 18 months ago we identified one of the groups of rebels in Syria and started to back them, and we had decided we were going to engage here, this might not be the case. But I don't know. I think that he did his very best not to get deeper in, and in the process, not in the process, but because of events that we have no control over, we're being pulled back in. It's regrettable, but I don't know what choice we had.
I had a letter writer yesterday who came in and said that, you know, any donkey can kick in the barn door that I sit here and criticize without offering any positive solutions. What would you do instead? And we do keep saying this, Mike, oh, I don't know what else to do. But there are people in government and in NGOs who have looked at this, and there are other things to do. It just would take a huge political will and active courage to do it. You'd have to back down and really think about, what is our relationship to Israel? Are we really going to back them to the hilt, to the point where our problems with the Arabs are multiplied? Is that good or bad? I'm not giving an opinion, but that has never been evaluated. We just accept it because you can't get elected, apparently, in this country without supporting Israel. That's the conventional thinking. And then you have to look at, okay, we really messed up in Iraq. We made a mess there. So does that mean we really do have to continue to escalate the war and stay there? What happens if we do just say, okay, we made a mess, sorry, we're backing out? We did that in Iran. You know, we messed up in Iran too. And that cost those people 20 years after we dumped, their legitimate elector and put the Shah in. Mm-hmm. And the reaction was the revolution. So it's 20 years of messed up politics. So maybe it is time that we just get out.
I read, I was reading some of the comments yesterday, and I was struck by just what the letter that you were referring to a moment ago, because it seems as though, okay, we could do what we had to do, but as you rightly pointed out, there are other options. So, all right, we do those other options, but all of those take time.
Right.
Time, and as you noted, political will.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is we have the time. Like, we had the time. We had, following the Iraq War and over the last 6 years, we had time. I'm not saying it would have been enough time, but it would have been time to start putting those building blocks in place. But again, we can't figure out a healthcare website. I mean, I don't mean to be, I'm just wondering, like, is that a will that we're going to fight over that? Are we actually going to have a substantive conversation as to how we rebuild what we muddied?
Right.
But
right.
I think that is the point. You're exactly right, Rosemary. It's getting to the point where there is political will to do something. I mean, at least now, by holding off the Arab nations, there are several Arab nations that are backing our effort. And I know that not all Arab nations are, and I know that they're ambivalent about it. I mean, they still are certainly against the United States bombing Arab countries. But the fact that it has brought them out and kind of forced them into committing and taking a stand and supporting, that's a pretty good scenario. And it wouldn't have happened 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, things have to happen. You know, it's just like, you know, we watched the FDR and the Roosevelts on public television last week. You know, there was a point where the U.S. was no way ready to go back into a world war. And Roosevelt waited until they were ready. I mean, you know, it does take time, and you have to read the tea leaves, right. I guess.
And there has to be a will of leadership, too, I think. I mean, you look, to bring it back to the UN speech, Obama made the United States sound heroic and great, protectorate of the world. We're going to go out and we're going to smash this network of death.
Well, don't you have
and
to
in fact, why do you have to do it? That yes, he has to politically, but is that good for the country? What he has become is one of the most warlike presidents ever. America is the biggest aggressor in the world. We have sanctioned torture, humiliation of prisoners. We have killed civilians and not even kept track of it. Is this what we stand for? We didn't used to.
When was that? That wasn't the case. I mean, since in the modern times, I mean, go back to Vietnam. What's changed?
Vietnam is when this all began, yeah. And I mean, look at Afghanistan. We actually even had the benefit of the example of the Soviet Union, which went in and tried to. Our own CIA and intelligence community knows what happened in Afghanistan. And we went back into Afghanistan. And then when we had an advantage, when the world opinion was with us and we might have won, we frittered that away. We got out.
We lost opportunities. I mean, it's a different world because of what we did immediately after 9/11.
Yes.
And
I am sorry. I am bashing the country. I think a terrible job has been done, and we're all responsible for this.
Faced with it, what should he have done yesterday? Should he have taken a strong stand and committed to you know, leading the world against these aggressors?
I mean, if he thinks that's right, he should. But has he taken a strong stand? If this doesn't work, are we gonna have boots on the ground? Use that overused expression. He hasn't gone that far. He hasn't committed fully. He's using the language of commitment. But have we really?
That time will tell.
Okay, I'm going to shut up because I'm being very negative. But this is very worrisome. Coming out of the Vietnam generation, I do not like to see the country embroiled in more war.
Well, I don't. Do you think President Obama likes that? I mean,
not at all.
There's a difference because this is where I'm. Because there is a reluctance, and it seems as though that sort of the rap has been all along that he is so reluctant. And Rosemary, you seem to be indicating that either it's and I don't know quite how to read what you're saying either that he's not. That he's more warlike than he portrays, or that you just have to take his actions?
I think he's highly political, and I don't think what he's doing represents a thought-out policy, thought out by either his administration or big, powerful thinkers in academia and a military complex who could put together a real policy and get everyone to support it. I don't think any of that has happened.
Because aren't all – it seems like everybody seems to be – okay, well, this we have to do this. We don't want to do this, but we have to do this at this current moment. And back to Mike's point, I don't know, and I know this is sort of a carryover from yesterday's conversation, but, you know, if not this, what? What do we do? What do we say?
Well, you know, that's to my point of view. And please, I'm not either for or against it. I'm just like trying
that.
To look at the whole thing.
No, I understand
and
that.
I don't like the way it's done. We have not been given the alternatives. What happens if we didn't go in? Even the number of fighters and the strength of ISIS is much contested within our own intelligence community. So what does happen if we don't go in? What would have happened if we didn't go in and look for weapons of mass destruction? We know in hindsight, nothing. It would have been great, probably. Yeah. It would have been not great. But certainly better than it is now. So what's the alternative? We have not been presented that.
These are not clear paths. No. I mean, the outcome is there's so many different outcomes, and most of them are not good. There's a few positive outcomes that maybe will degrade ISIS to the point where it becomes, no longer a player, and that a stable government might actually take hold in Iraq, and that the Kurds might be given some say in their future. You know, you can hope for that. And what can you do now to make that happen? Well, I don't know what else. I think you go after ISIS or the Islamic State or the group calling itself the Islamic State, whatever you want to call it.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk about other issues. We'll get to the letters as well. We welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion for this Thursday morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have letters. Let's get to them. Lynn writes, I agree with Rosemary completely. The only addition I'd make is to remind her of the role of the Dulles brothers in the Eisenhower administration. Under the policies of those three, we overthrew democratically elected leaders in Iran and Guatemala, which continues to suffer from that legacy today, as do we with all the immigrants coming from there. And Alan Dulles was instrumental in the disastrous, Bay of Pigs fiasco.
Sounds like she read the great Stephen Kinzer book on the Dulles brothers, doesn't it?
Good stuff. Why is Ray silent on this topic?
Oh, you should have heard me during the break.
Yes, yes.
Truth be told, I was up at 4 o'clock this morning.
Okay.
And I'm just kind of in a fugue state. I'll find myself in Connecticut sometime later today.
Is that the fugue state?
Yeah, that's the nutmeg state.
Okay. instead of always reaching for a bomb or missile, I'd like to see us using our other strengths. Movie making and advertising make terrorism uncool and ridiculous with clever, funny propaganda. Shame their religious orientation by pointing out how their actions don't reflect the Quran and so forth. The Iranian big shot on CBS last night had it right. Military response just throws gasoline on the fire. That from Kathleen.
It's thoughtful.
Julia says, unfortunately, as long as oil is a significant part of the equation, real alternatives will not emerge. We also got this from Todd, who says, are they using the U.S. 1980s Russian policy against the U.S.? Get them to spend to their death. And Michael writes in and says, what's with Rosemary, the most warlike president ever? Didn't he remove us from Iraq? Isn't he removing us from Afghanistan? Didn't W start two wars? Obama is responding to a threat by a bunch of savages. Rosemary, do what you want to drive or criticize.
Peter Berger, CNN article. He is the most warlike by number of drone strikes, by number of countries attacked. He far surpasses George W. Bush's record. Sorry, it's true.
Ryan says, in regards to civilian casualties, I have a friend in the Marines who has said that because we dropped letters on Iraqi civilians warning them about dropping bombs, their deaths are their fault. He also said that it was the right thing to invade Iraq to send a message to terrorists, even if Iraq has nothing to do with 9/11. I wonder if the sentiment is shared by many Americans.
I think not.
Yeah, I don't.
We are the most warlike, maybe. Oh, dear.
But defending our invasion of Iraq is a difficult one today.
Yeah, I think it. Did I just hear Rosemary joining the Blaine Everything on Israel chorus? Very distressing. Please give us a break, especially on Rosh Hashanah.
No, I did not blame Israel for everything, but American policy towards Israel has been single-minded and not reconsidered in decades.
Lillian says, are you kidding me? We never created terror in the name of war.
What is that? Say that again?
Well, I'm sorry. I just lost the letter, Ray. I apologize.
Okay.
So
I'm not sure
I can't
what
read
meant.
The full. My All apologies right. to the letter writer, and I'll try to retrieve it in a moment. Steve writes, it seems to me that the class of players in the Middle East mess that never gets mentioned is that of the corporations, especially the oil corporations. Am I simply not paying attention? Or if not, why not? That from Steve. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. JR writes, I wonder if the circumstances are combating terrorists rather than a sovereign nation puts this president in a unique position in our history. All right, so we are going to move on to other topics. Let us go to the bombing trial in Boston. This was announced yesterday, the trial of the accused Boston Marathon bombings. The man accused of the Boston Marathon bombings, the trial will take place in Boston, but will be delayed 2 months and is to start in January. Shokhar Tsarnaev will go to court, but that trial will stay in Boston. A defense request to move the trial outside Boston was rejected, saying that the region was big enough to find 12 jurors who could be impartial. The judge wrote in his opinion, quote, "It is doubtful whether a jury could be selected anywhere in the country whose members were wholly unaware of the marathon bombings."
Yeah, it's interesting that the article points out that the Supreme Court has actually issued a ruling on circumstances under which you move a case, and they're very strict. And one element is how big is your jury pool?
Yeah.
So there's 5 million people in this area around Boston. So surely you can find 12 people out of 5 million.
Yeah, how long will it take to do that?
Well, you know, the question is, because you know about something, does it make it impossible for you to have an open mind and listen to all the facts and make a fair judgment? I mean, you know, in a case like this, everybody's heard about it.
So yeah, they've heard about it, but they're not experts on it.
Right.
I mean, you've covered trials. You go in and it's shocking how many jurors will say, no, I didn't read anything about that. Oh, I heard about it a little bit. But they don't have the kind of detailed knowledge that makes them incompetent as a juror.
When and then the 2 months, I guess, is just to get all the ducks in a row, and this all takes
time.
They'd
wanted a year.
They'd wanted 10 months. Yeah, they wanted 10 months.
So that is another item in the news. Let's go to one more story, and then we'll take a break in just a moment. And let me just bring up the story. Hey, Mike, what do you got going on the front page?
Times Union.
Good news, if you have a child under the age of 17 in New York, you're going to get a check in the mail for $350. They don't give you a check for each of your five children, Ray.
Rats.
But you will be getting $350 as part of a family tax relief credit that was a three-year program that was part of this year's budget deal. It's interesting that it's coming so close to November.
Isn't it, though? Boy, what a surprise.
A coinky dink.
Yeah, perhaps I'm being a little cynical. But
no,
it
you're
is,
not.
It is giving back to families that are in between $40,000 a year and $300,000 a year who had at least one child under the age of 17 during the 2012
tax year. That's not even going to cover the dental cleanings in the next year.
I don't know. I mean,
it seems like an awfully wide range.
It does.
The great part is you get taxed on it at the end of the year anyway when you file. You have to include it as income. So thanks.
It does bring back, though, the argument that was going on back in March and April of this year as the state was pushing through to get a budget. And this was part of it. It was tax rebates. It's an overall tax reduction. There's going to also be some other tax credits that are coming back. This, by the way, is 3 years in a row. So it'll be 3 years that you'll get this.
There are those who say this is not a good tax policy at all.
Right. Is it couldn't they put the money to other uses that would fight poverty or improve education or, go into infrastructure? And this is what people argued back in April who were against this. Nonetheless, it's coming at a time when people are looking for money to spend around the holidays, and it may get pumped back into the economy, which is helpful also. But look for that check.
People are always looking for money. This is clearly timed because the elections are just ahead.
Just around the corner.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, New York has had tax rates before. In Albany County, they're going over the next 3 years, they're going to give back close to $6 million. 17,000 people are going to get the checks, and it's similar numbers for the rest of the capital region. So look for the mailbox. And you know, that's one aspect of it. They could, because the state does require you to file electronically, they could electronically transfer it to your bank account. Mm-hmm. But instead, you're going to get a physical check in the mail, an extra reminder of how good government is. Again, being perhaps
just frame it.
Some of you will. Yeah. it seems very targeted. Okay. And then tell us about the airlines, Mike, because I want to see Rosemary.
This is fun. This is the ranch section.
Yeah, I love this. I love this section.
Eric Anderson, our business editor and expert on all things aeronautic, I guess, he says that flights out of the Albany Airport this summer were more crowded than ever. In July and August, 90 and 91% of flights were filled. What this comes down to is if you get weather causes a problem and you need to get rescheduled, there's fewer seats to reschedule you on. It means you're going to have more difficulty sitting next to your traveling companion. Sometimes that's desirable, sometimes it's not. But you'll get more middle seats and you'll have less choices. And that's the downside of it. Airlines are now packing the airplanes tighter. They're making a lot of money now. And perhaps the good side of this, according to Eric Anderson's story today, is that authorities at the airport say it will translate into more flights in and out of the Albany County Airport. And it's proven that Albany is a solid airport and that traffic is up and that it could mean more options in the coming months. I hope so.
More uncomfortable options.
All of which proves that customer service counts for nothing. Pack them in, make them uncomfortable. Make them pay more for that, too.
Yeah.
And then deal with TSA. But, you know, flights up and
we're doing great. Oh, you brought up TSA. How do you feel
about
them?
Actually, I have a new view on them after the Secret Service. The TSA would never have allowed an intruder to get into the White House, and certainly not with a 2.5-inch pocket knife in his pocket.
No.
So maybe TSA should take over from the Secret
Service. And he would have been shoeless.
And he would not have shoes.
No belt.
More difficult to run
falling down.
And shoeless and beltless.
Yeah.
And as he was running, his pants would have fallen down. Yeah. He would have tripped, and it would have been easier.
So
suddenly, it's a Benny Hill skit.
Right.
Cross training between the TSA and the Secret Service. There you go. No, there's just nothing pleasant about traveling anymore.
No,
it's not just me. It's
I'm flying
everybody
tomorrow,
I
and I'm not even looking forward to it.
No.
You know, and this is an anecdotal story, but it's just, this is why I don't understand. You were talking about of trying to, if they bump you, then where do you go? So, and this is where I don't understand the airlines. So, we took a recent trip, and there were 9 of us traveling. I admit that's a lot of people.
Yeah, but, you get your own plane.
Okay, look, we're an Irish Catholic family. We come by this honestly. So, so there's 9 of us traveling, and we get up there, and now we all get our tickets together, all right? And they come in, they say, well, 3 of you who just happen to be the children, we don't have tickets for them. They can't go. And
just leave them.
And they say, all right, well, we can't leave the kids. And they go, well, I'm sorry, you know, you're going to have to. So then they go through this whole thing of saying, all right, what we can do is that we can get you because your connection is Newark. So we're going to put you all in a cab and we'll send you down to Newark.
Oh, great.
So now they have to change the tickets because obviously they're just not going to put the children into a cab. So now they have to change the tickets for the adults. So for 1 adult and 2 children and so forth. Mm-hmm. And they go in the cab, blah, blah, blah. So they put them in the cab, and let's face it, you know, a 3-hour ride with children in the cab with a driver who is, you know, listening to really loud music and may have been under the influence, whatever. So he goes down, and but here's the kicker. We get on the plane, and there's like 18 seats on
there. Oh, yes, of course.
So how does that work?
Annoying.
Like, how does that work? How does the airline make money in paying a cab to drive from Albany to Newark? And this kind of thing is what I don't understand.
And if you asked, you'd be kicked off as an unruly passenger.
Well, that's absolutely right. They warned my wife because my wife was like, I'm not leaving without those kids on
Madam.
That plane.
Madam. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe you, Joe, and Rosemary ought to do a special 1-hour rant edition of the round table.
It's just interesting. I find
any donkey can kick in the barn.
Right.
Yes.
Kick in the hangar.
Just such a colorful way of calling you an ass. I really admire that. We have great letter writers. Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. You're listening to the round table at WAMC.
Support comes from Haldora Rhinebeck. Women's clothing, fall collections, wool town coats, silk blouses, home textiles, Kinross sweaters, Hanrow undergarments. New weekender location in Millerton. Haldora.com. Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York. Screening independent films Thursday through Sunday. Through a Lens Darkly, Expedition to the End of the World, A Coffee in Berlin, and Closed Curtain. Timeandspace.org. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
Slow high.
We've been talking about our lockbox and our lockbox challenge. I'm sure you've been hearing our promos, and we are excited because we have a $25,000 challenge. Actually, what, 30, right?
It's 30 now.
$30,000 challenge on the table, which would bring us to a third of the way through the drive before we even started if we make this. And this is all very exciting. Megan Finnegan is with us to give us an update, to tell us where we are in all of this, to tell us to light a fire under us, to make sure that we go to the lockbox and we make sure that we do what we have to do before the fun drive. Megan, where are we now?
Well, I would say that the fire has been lit because we've been getting tons of calls, tons of mail, and tons of people online, and we're now up to $210,724.
So we have 11 days to go?
We got 11 days to go. We need another $89,276.
A mere bag of shells, Norton. Famous last words.
Is that true? 11 days to go?
11 days?
10, 11? I don't know.
Uh-oh. I hope I've counted correctly.
It's a week from Monday.
Oh, a week from Monday. Monday. Oh, yeah. Okay. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. All right, you have that. Very good. Excellent math skills there, Mike. So 11 days. How much is that a day? Have you figured that out?
I have. It's actually gone down a little bit in the last couple of days. Now we need $8,116 a day.
All right. Well, do it. Make it happen. We have $30,000 on the table. And
So clear me up now. We have a $30,000 challenge. If we hit what threshold?
We need to get to $300,000 by the morning of the fund drive. We had $100,000 when they made the challenge initially. The Lennox Foundation said, we'll give you $25,000 if you can make another $200,000, which would have given us $300,000 on day one. And then we had another generous donor who came in and said, I'll do another $5,000 specifically for the control room.
So $30,000 challenge, basically.
Right.
If we hit the 300,000 mark before the start of the fund drive.
Yep.
Right. All right, got it. So we got to write this down.
So if we get the $300,000, they bring us up to 330, and we'll be like a third of the way through the drive.
Yes.
That's good news.
Boy, our math's getting... We're in radio.
Yeah, I know.
That's why we're here today.
We're
people.
In radio.
Yeah.
We're in radio, and you can't see the calculators. Megan, thank you very much. A reminder, WAMC.org. You can call us 800-323-9262 and just hit extension 0, the operator, and they'll send you in the right direction. And all good stuff. You can get a mug.
Yep.
What's the best phrase you've heard? Any good rosemary bashing phrases on the mugs yet?
You know, I'm going to take a look today and see if I can find one.
Yes, please do. I haven't heard enough.
Something about a barn kicker. Excellent. Megan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
guys.
It. That's good news. That's fun. Mike, you can have your mic back. Thank you. Mike, you can have your mic back.
Yeah.
You know, hear that phrase enough. All right, let me read some letters and then we'll get on to one or two more topics before we have to. I'll leave for the morning here and move on to other things. Comments on the announcement by Cuomo and Christie today. Wonder when the profiling starts. This is the increased security on public transportation.
Yeah.
That announcement. Patsy has a new theory about the White House intruder. I've been considering the event from many perspectives. What if the intruder was a plant by Homeland Security and TSA to test the readiness of the Secret Service?
TSA testing Secret Service. Ooh, little... interagency fighting. I could get into that. Yeah, they didn't do so well.
Peter writes, indiscriminate killing of citizens has always been part of war. A-bombs in Japan, random bombing of German cities, etc. And that was in the quote-unquote good war. It's why we should avoid wars, but unfortunately it cannot be avoided. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Want to talk about just a couple more stories. Tony Stewart cleared on charges yesterday. He will not face criminal charges in connection with Kevin Ward Jr.'s death. It was ruled, I think it was from the very beginning of this tragedy, where a young race car driver who was killed in a dirt track in upstate New York on August 9th was hit by a car driven by Tony Stewart. I think from that time, the police agencies investigating said it would be highly unlikely if charges were filed. They made that official yesterday. One of the other items of the story, which I think is important to point out, because there were the two, you know, did he do it intentionally, or did he swerve, or why didn't he see him, and all of this stuff. And then other people were pointing out, okay, but what kind of guy gets out of his car and runs into a track where there's cars running around?
One who is high.
And then you find out that is a guy that is high, and he was under the influence of marijuana. And toxicology reports say that according to according to the reports, that it was at a degree that could impair or greatly impair his judgment.
Unbelievable to me that he got into a car in the first place and drove at high speeds.
A racing
around
car.
A track. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, NASCAR. Ugh.
I mean, the risks of being
NASCAR,
under
way,
the influence while you're engaged in a risky practice like that, like dirt track racing. I mean, that shows poor judgment.
Explain that not NASCAR, because these are both NASCAR drivers. They it happened at a dirt track that
was not sanctioned by NASCAR.
Not under the lower level,
and it was. So
it has led to changes, though, in NASCAR
rules. And I actually
rules.
Do not. I don't know that the other driver was.
Tested?
No. I don't think he was a NASCAR driver. I don't think he was. I think he was at a lower level on the dirt track. Tony Stewart, who is an A-lister within that world, would come into these tracks to help them
and boost
and,
the sport,
and boost the sport, and to engage younger drivers. And but my understanding was that this track, the event, wasn't sanctioned by NASCAR, and the driver who was killed was not a quote-unquote NASCAR driver.
Well, now there are there's a new standard to stay in your car when you have an accident until you're directed to leave it.
And, is there a standard about getting into your car while not under the influence?
I wonder if there's going to be any kind of sobriety tests. Certainly, it's a warning.
And of course, it has some implications for states where they're legalizing or widening the legal use of marijuana, and what effect that will have on driving.
Well, we're seeing that in sports all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you do if you're play for the Broncos and it's legal?
Oh, your employer is allowed to have rules that are more rigid than the law.
Yeah, I mean, alcohol is legal too, but you can't.
Can you drink at WIMC? I don't know the rules.
Can you or do you? That's really a question.
I don't know. We got a beer segment at 11:40. So.
Oh, boy. Here we go again.
It's journalistic research, Joe.
That's right. Thank you, Mike. We love hearing from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Don't forget the locked box, WAMC.org. Ray, Rosemary, Mike, thank you very much for being here this morning. Appreciate it. And we'll be back tomorrow as well. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.